Well, top of the morning to you. We're walking in a winter wonderland. Dane Neal is here for Bill Leff. I'm Wendy Snyder, and I sound terrible. I know.
No, you sound great. It's got that kind of a smoky voice, as they say in the business.
It's more phlegmy, I think.
Okay, that's less.
Isn't there a Peggy Phlegmy joke somewhere?
Yeah, Peggy Phlegmy. Right. She, well, of course, famous skater, you know, also famous talker. I've seen her do some commercials. Walking in the winter wonderland and driving is, I guess, so this is like kind of our first foray into that whole, wow, it's treacherous out there kind of thing.
Did anyone, including Bertrand or Mary Vandeveld, actually it's Don Kleppen, did anyone do anything in advance to prepare for today? Because I did was tell my son to fill up the gas tank, and I of course did not.
It still feels early. It still feels
we knew it was coming.
Well, I noticed this morning that my wife put in one of those mittens with the scraper on the end.
Oh, in your car?
So sweet. I don't usually use that, but she must have seen it in the garage and just put it in there for me. So that was very nice.
That's a sweet little good morning, honey.
I know. How about that?
Jimmy Mack got the shovels out yesterday, so that's good.
I did fire up the snowblower yesterday and gassed it up in anticipation.
Look at the prep work we all did.
Well, and we've had a couple days leading up to this where you look outside, hey, it snowed. The kids are like, oh, it snowed. You know, but it was like gone by, you know, that afternoon. So this is like the first one that really feels like it's going to stick and kind of lead us into that.
That we're looking forward to.
Yeah, it was tough. I mean, it wasn't that tough. Come on, we're from the area where Chicago is. We can handle it. But it was pretty messy out there.
And it's a little early. That's what everybody's complaining about. In years past, you'd still have like 70-degree days sometimes in October, occasionally in November. Now it's just like, nope, let's get this baby started.
Yeah, it's just getting right into it. And it depends on what kind of car you have, too, because we've got one that's, you know, an SUV kind of thing. It's got four-wheel drive, makes things pretty easy. But then one of the cars is just it's just absolutely 100%. It's a great little car, but it's terrible in the snow. I mean, really bad, where you really have to think about it.
Yeah, my son Michael is driving to COD right now, College of DuPage, in that crappy little car. So I said, just leave early. What did I tell you off the air, although don't use the swear word?
I can't, but I think it'd be a great public service campaign. It was, leave early and take, and then there's some expletives in there, your time.
Yes. And if you get there early, go to Starbucks and get a coffee and a muffin or something like that.
That's it. Kind of slow down, take it all in. Because that's it, is like when people are kind of trying to do more than either the car will allow or the roads can allow. And then that's when you get in trouble. If you're just kind of slow and steady, get you there safe.
Yeah, because I have to say, I actually left early. I know, Bertrand, you probably expected me to be much later. I was here earlier than usual.
I'm very proud of you.
Thank you. I left early. And it wasn't that bad, as long as you just take your time.
Well, it's a holiday.
Yeah, that helped us.
Because when I got on the road, too, it was slow, but it was like, thank God it's a holiday because there were fewer cars driving.
Yes, that's a good point.
And on this expressway, we got to give a shout-out to IDOT workers or the plow guys, whoever handles that or puts the salt down. It was pretty good. So, you know, the 290 coming in was pretty clear. It's in those, you know, in the neighborhoods like Elmhurst, Lombard, you know, in those areas where they're a little behind.
I've decided I would like to be a plow driver. Imagine all the power you have. You're up so high and you can just get people clear the path for you. Get out of my way. The plow's coming through. How cool would that be?
Is that like the modern day I want to be like a train conductor? Is that something that people actually want to be?
No, this is cooler. And you get to wear that cool neon vest. I love neon.
Okay. Yeah, but it's tough. You know, if you're a train conductor, it's one thing. But I think that business, it can be very good. It's probably very lucrative in the past. But, you know, over the last handful of years, maybe the last 10 years or so, it's kind of been hit or miss, right? There'll be times where we'll have a winter. It'll snow just a few times. You know, it's just kind of brown outside the whole time. So I don't know that it works all the time. I guess if you're like a city plow driver, then you get paid no matter what.
Right.
Right, because you got to be, you know, ready to go.
Right.
Ready to mobilize.
I don't know. I have to think about it. Maybe I'll buy a pickup truck and get a little plow for the front.
You got practice on some smaller plows.
Yeah,
some training plows.
Lots, yes. And it is Veterans Day. We're going to talk very briefly when we come back about why it's called Veterans Day. I have a junior in high school who last night was like, do you think we're going to have a snow day? I'm like, Dylan, I really don't think so.
The bar for snow day is typically pretty high.
I know, but I'm just glad they have school today and they are honoring the veterans. They have a Veterans Day assembly. So we'll talk about Veterans Day. Bill Leff is off today. Dane Neal is in his place. And I'm Wendy Snyder at 720 WGN. It is a day to celebrate veterans. Found a little information in the Chicago Tribune that I was unaware of. Maybe you guys knew this. I didn't pay much attention in history class. There, I said it. Today is Veterans Day, and it's veterans with no apostrophe. And it's not Armistice Day, and it's not Memorial Day. And I got a little background, and I wanted to share it with people. Americans have celebrated living and deceased veterans, all those who served the country in any branch of the military, on November 11th, since it was first officially marked by Congress in 1926. That was 8 years after World War I ended, on what was known as Armistice Day, November 11th. 1918. The observance was called Armistice Day for this reason until President Dwight Eisenhower changed the name in 1954 to be inclusive of all veterans, not just those who served in World War I. Don't you remember hearing about Armistice Day and then all of a sudden it went away?
Well, when you were paying attention in history class, you think to yourself, okay, this is one of those things that happened. But it does make sense, you know, that you would go ahead and kind of switch it to be more all-inclusive. You got to figure World War I was the first, like, really huge global conflict. And as much as we've had World War II and all these other things that have happened around the globe, it was a thing that they said, the war to end all wars. Like, nothing else could ever happen like that. And, of course, we were wrong. But, yeah, yes, it's great to include everybody.
So the reason that people pressed for change, They said Armistice Day didn't honor those who had served in World War II or the Korean War. And it's also, if I didn't know that there wasn't an apostrophe, I have to be honest with you. I didn't write it out anywhere. I didn't make a social media post. But if you were to put veteran apostrophe S Day, that's only honoring one veteran, because that's the possessive. If you were to write veterans apostrophe day, that's a day belonging to all the veterans, which perhaps isn't wrong in spirit, but grammatically it's incorrect. There was Michael Dais is a lecturer at Northwestern University's Medill School of Journalism, and he teaches this to his students. It's a descriptive, he said. It's not an indication of ownership. If you were to use an apostrophe S, that would imply the day belongs to the veterans, that they own the day. It's like when you see a girl's restroom or boy's restroom, there's no apostrophe. So it just encompasses everyone. Although Veterans Day primarily honors those living and often still serving members of the military, it certainly remains a day to honor and remember deceased veterans as well. That could lead some to confuse the observation with Memorial Day, which is a day, obviously in late May, set aside to honor those military personnel who died in the service of the United States, particularly in battle or as a result of injuries suffered in battle. Memorial Day itself had its origins in Decoration Day ceremonies first held in 1868 to honor Civil War dead.
You know what you think about this? And I do this on a regular basis, and of course have the kids do it as well, as to when you see a veteran or you're aware of someone that has served the country, as you thank them for their service. And I think that you see that more and more. I don't remember seeing that or experiencing that to the extent that it is now when I was a kid. And I think there is more recognition and appreciation than ever before, right? Even in these times where I think every day in spirit, right, is Veterans Day.
I agree. And I was reading somewhere, and I'm sorry to say I don't remember where, and I don't have it pulled up on the computer right now. But I read somewhere that veterans don't want you to say thank you for your service. They want you to say thank you for your support. I don't know. If a veteran's out there, maybe you can help us figure this out. Because when I say thank you for your service, I totally wholeheartedly mean it.
Yeah.
I just sometimes feel funny saying it. Like, it's now become just a...
like a normal kind of thing to say. Like, I don't know. I don't know that you should feel funny saying it. I do. It's just sometimes tough to say, you know, if you've got one of those veterans that's wearing one of those, you know, the caps where it says like the name of a battleship, yeah, or something on it, or some other kind of identifying thing, or even through the conversation you're aware of it, then I think it's great. It's appropriate. I think it's a show of respect. And I think it should be pretty customary. And so even if it does seem like, hey, this is a normal thing we're saying all the time, I think if you can build that into kind of your normal vernacular, that's a good thing.
But mean it when you say it. Because you know how, like, you're in my thoughts and prayers became just like an automatic thing. Yeah. And now I don't want you to say to a veteran, thanks for your service. You know, put some heart behind it. That's all. Casey's on the line. Hi, Casey. How are you?
Hi, good. Thank you. I believe I learned in school that the armistice was signed on November 11th at 11:11 a.m.
Yes.
So 11:11, 11:11.
So that's how we should remember people and maybe just have a moment of silence at 11:11 on 11:11.
Yeah, I think if there's groups that go around to the different veteran cemeteries that play taps, they do it at 11:11.
That's pretty touching. Yeah. Casey, thank you for that information.
Thank you.
All right, Carol wants to build on this a little bit. Hi, Carol, how are you?
Good morning. I'm fine. How are you?
Pretty good.
We're good, yeah.
Good.
Merry Christmas.
I just wanted to pass along a quick memory from when I was a little girl, and I am now 73 years old. I remember shopping with my mother. Obviously, we had the day off from school on November 11th, and at 11 a.m. or thereabouts, but from what I remember, Mom said, okay, Carol, we're going to turn east, and we're going to be quiet for 1 minute. And I remember standing next to my mom. I was probably 7 years old, and we were quiet for 1 minute, and she said, we need to turn east to remember what happened today on November 11th. And so that's my memory, and I just wanted to pass that along for whatever reason.
You know, Carol, you know how hard it would be for me to not talk for a minute, but I will start doing it now at 11:11 on 11:11 from this point forward.
And figure out which way is east.
I don't even think that that's done anymore, but that was back in the 50s.
Yeah. Well, thank you. And I don't know, you're not supposed to say Happy Veterans Day, are you?
I'm married to a Vietnam veteran, and I just look at him and just tell him that he's my hero.
Oh, that is so sweet. Tell him that he is our hero as well. We appreciate it, Carol.
I will definitely do that. Both of you have a wonderful day, and thank you so much.
Thank you so much. It's a great caller.
That's great. And you think about it, that's the origin. Is 11/11 was Armistice Day for World War One, and how huge that that treaty signing was, because it ended really what was just an incredibly damaging war.
Bless you, veterans, and thank you so much for your service. And I'm saying that from my heart.
We'll practice again throughout the course of the program.
All right. It's Dane. It's Wendy. It's 720 WGN. Beginning to look a lot like Christmas, and through no fault of ours, Mother Nature just dumped on us today. It's Dane Neal, it's Wendy Snyder, and Jane Manzouris. I did say that correctly, right?
You did a nice job. I was listening in the hallway. You're like, how do you say that? And I'm screaming down the hall, Manzouris.
However, it's too late because I don't even need to know how to say it anymore,
You're right. You don't need to know how to say it. I'm changing my name.
Just for something to do,
yeah,
or is there a reason?
I'm just going to go with St. Jane. No, I'm not doing that. I got married 3 weeks ago.
Congratulations.
Thank you. So my new last name is Klaus. I'm going to have a great time around the holidays. Right? Klaus? Santa Klaus?
Santa Klaus.
Klaus. Yes. I love
it. Jane Klaus. I think it sounds, it's got a nice ring to it.
I do like it. Although, doesn't it hurt to give up your name?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, but I figure like the first half of my life, I'm a Manzouris, and I'll just play the last back half as a Klaus.
You could always do the hyphenated thing though, too.
Manzouris, Klaus, that's a lot of letters, a lot of S's.
You know what I did is I took Snyder and made it my middle name, so there's no hyphen.
Yes, that's what I'm doing. Manzouris will be my middle name. But I'm in the process of doing that right now, so I'm still going with Jane Manzouris.
All right. Well, she's Jane Manzouris, and the reason you're here, you're host of Living Healthy Chicago on WGN-TV. WGN-TV is on our TV all the time, so I see you very frequently.
Oh, good.
You are getting things together. You're going to be at Tree Time? I'm sorry. I'm all confused about all this.
You know what? So this is, I love that you're confused because I'll explain it to you.
All right, good.
So I'm the host of Living Healthy, but I also host another show called Creative Living that doesn't even air in Chicago.
Well, that sucks.
And it's all about living creatively. So people don't know this about me. I love to do push-ups and, you know, all this athletic and nutrition stuff, but I love to make and create and decorate. So they said, Jane, you're obsessed with the holidays, because I say anything with glitter and flocking, and I am in. So, Tree Time Creations, as you know, Wendy, I know you love going to the shop.
Oh, it's so fun. And Dean was just out there on Sunday.
Yes.
It is walking into Santa's playhouse.
It is a playhouse. And so they know that I'm creative and I love to decorate and I love the holiday spirit. So I'm going to be out at Tree Time on Saturday, November 23rd, before the store opens for a big, huge holiday decorating event. It's starting at 8 a.m. It goes to 10 a.m. And we are having trends. We're having goodie bags. We're going to do some DIY demonstrations. We're going to do some inspiration. But it really is, I think, a great way to be inspired by the holidays. Now, I watch a lot of the Hallmark Channel, so I can get inspired for the holidays. This morning, I woke up, and I already am inspired because of Christmas. But I feel like this is a great way to get ideas on what you can do to decorate your home for the holidays.
Christmas is one of those, you know, I don't know if people have attachment to their Halloween decorations. Maybe they do if you've got a giant, you know, moving spider or skeleton or something like that. But Christmas is one where it does sort of straddle that line between traditional kind of family heirloomy stuff that gets out there that people see once a year, or ornaments, but then also, like you said, on the trend side, you know, where you're going to try to capitalize on some of the new cool ways to kind of showcase the spirit.
Yeah, and I love that you said that, because we all have that nostalgia and those old ornaments that we made when we were in fourth grade. So what do you do with them? I say keep them.
Oh, totally.
But you have a tree that's the family tree. That's the things that you made. That's what your kids made. It's like, it's a way back machine. But I'm also a big fan of having several trees in your house. So you're going to have the trend tree, which is like blue and platinum or whatever fancy tree you want. And then you've got your nostalgia tree.
Is there any room in your house where you wouldn't have a tree?
God. Bertrand, I am going to kick my foot up your butt.
Answer the question.
Go ahead, Steve. Ask
Is there any room in my house? Yeah.
No, is there any particular room you're like, a tree would just not go here?
Actually, I have a really cute stuffed Christmas tree made out of green fabric, and it goes in my bathroom.
Because they're laughing at me because it's just this little silver tinsel tree that I put on the back of the toilet tank.
Exactly.
Fine. I host Thanksgiving, so I like to be festive in the bathroom.
Does holiday spirit stop at the bathroom door? I say no.
But we
take
have
it with you in there.
We have a major beautiful Tree Time tree. I like the multicolored lights, so that has our kids' ornaments. My aunt on St. Nicholas Day always gave us an ornament or three every year. So I have some dating back to 1963 when I was born, and those go on the tree. Then my husband has a Star Wars tree, which is all Star Wars inspired. And then I have an anniversary tree, which is just white lights, and that's in the front room. And that is Wallace sleigh bell ornaments. They're just silver balls.
Yes.
Jim buys me one every year. It represents how many years we've been married.
Aww.
So that's our anniversary tree, and then there's one on the porch. So
there's a lot of trees. So this isn't even about the Christmas tree anymore. It's kind of like a grove, like a Christmas forest.
It's like a forest. And some people have memorial trees too. That's a new trend popping up as well.
I have not even heard of that, but how would you do that?
If you have lost a loved one or you lost a pet, so you just put ornaments, their favorite ornament or maybe their picture or something on a small tree, and you call it the memorial tree.
All right, I like that.
Wow.
Wendy's got a new tree. So you love to decorate too.
I like decorating for Christmas, Thanksgiving. Tree Time actually has some Thanksgiving things, but I don't go crazy for that.
So this is what I love about Thanksgiving, because it's like you're getting a little warm up for decorating for Christmas. So we're going to do at Tree Time, we're going to transition a table from Thanksgiving into Christmas. So let's say you're hosting both dinners, then you'll have, maybe it all starts with this blank canvas of a gold tablecloth.
Whoa.
And we'll add some of the things they have there and transition it.
So as you know, oftentimes the official, of course, people are starting earlier and earlier, and I think that's a testament to all the decorations and everything. So but usually after Thanksgiving is the whole kind of accepted, now you can kind of get fully into the whole Christmas thing on the decorating side. So you're suggesting this sort of crossover moment.
Right.
Like it's late this year, so there's not
really
enough time.
So after Thanksgiving dinner, then there's this like kind of countdown thing, maybe some strobe lights and a smoke machine, and then you train. and it's Christmas time, right?
And now all of a sudden, everything goes from like birch color to these fabulous glittery gold and red and green Christmas table decorations.
You know, I never thought you could mix gold and silver. I know Burl Ives saying silver and gold. I get that. But they really do look pretty cool together.
I know. And I actually like a midnight blue and black together as well.
I agree.
We live in the same school. I love this.
I like to decorate as well. Jane Manzuris Klaus. Is that, what am I calling you now?
Just Jane Manzuris.
Okay.
Which you can get down to just Jane. You're like, share.
Just Jane.
Then she's made it.
I mean, really. There's only a couple other Janes. I'd like to just be known as Jane. Yeah.
All right, Jane, she is a TV host, DIY expert. It's a special one-of-a-kind holiday event at Treetime Christmas Creations in Lake Barrington. It's happening Saturday, November 23rd, so a couple Saturdays from now.
So this is why I'm here. Put it in your calendar now. Save the date. We're going to have mimosas, a very light breakfast, some prizes, goodie bags.
I might be going.
You should go.
You can learn about the latest holiday trends, discover new ways to decorate your home, and participate in a hands-on workshop. I like all that stuff. Attendees will get an exclusive 15% discount off that day's purchase at Treetime.
Absolutely. So you're there before the door opens or the store opens, so you can go right and you're in and you're shopping before 10 a.m.
And it's free, but you need to register, correct?
It's free, but you need to register. We'd like you to register. If you just show up, I'm not going to turn you away. I'd love to have you.
You can register today on WGN Radio's Facebook events page or get details at WGNRadio.com/events. What is the hot thing this year?
We talked about a couple of things. So I think two things is there's some innovative lighting techniques happening. So we're going to talk about those. So you have your tree lit, but you can add some lights down the center of the tree to make it almost twinkle, which I absolutely love. Flocking is back. Right?
I'm not a big flocking
fan. Oh, it looks good. Wait till you see the flocking.
That's like the pretend snow, right?
You know, the pretend snow. Some of the other things I like is these monochromatic trees. So I have an all red tree. So it's red tree, red lights, red ornaments. And then tree toppers are a huge topic of discussion. What do you put on the top of your tree?
You need to hold that thought. We're going to take a quick break. At Tree Time, this is the first time I saw a new tree topper. A lot of times people put a star, sometimes like an angel. Yeah. Tree topper talk when we come back, because they have a new one at Tree Time. That's amazing. She's Jane. She's Jane Manzuris. She's host of Living Healthy Chicago on WGN-TV. You can hear her on WGN Radio as well. Quick break, and then we're coming back and talking about tree toppers on WGN. Is this Brenda Lee?
Rocking around the Christmas trees.
It is Bill Leff is off today, and I'm Wendy Snyder. Dane Neal is in for Bill, and we have Jane Manzuris here. We were talking about decorating. We're going to do the tree topper talk, but first, a great idea. 219 says, several members of our family have taken to putting up their tree before Thanksgiving and decorating it with turkeys and pine cones and orange feathers. We all refer to them as Thanksmas trees.
I think it's great.
And then you just swap out the ornaments.
Right. Then you don't have to do all the work right after Thanksgiving. The tree is up. You just swap out the ornaments while you're swapping out your table.
I enjoy that. Tree topper, we're doing a quick poll. What do you have, Dane?
Well, okay, so I think we've switched it. We have either rotates between star and angel. There are so many really cool ones out there that I have seen that I'm like, oh, that's great. But that I have a problem with the tree. It can't hold it. You know, it's like too heavy for it or like, leans, you know, and so you kind of got to be careful unless there's some sort of, you know, special stick. Stabilizer.
Yeah, I'm sure there is, but you know, sometimes the ceramic angels are a little bit too heavy for the tree. I do a big, huge bow, but I've been doing that for years, so I really want to switch it up. So when I was at Tree Time, I'm looking around at all of their tree toppers. And so we're going to talk tree toppers while we're there on Saturday, the 23rd. What do you do, Wendy?
We do a star. It's kind of, I don't know how to describe it. It's a wire star, so it's not very heavy, but it still kind of tips a little bit. And they never make the top of a tree like sturdy enough for any of these. When I was growing up, we had like this beautiful finial that just, it was so pretty. It was turquoise and pink and just very multicolored. And that went on top of my tree when I was growing up, when I was a little kid. I don't know where that finial is.
What happened to it? It's in the attic somewhere.
It probably broke because some of those ornaments, like years ago, were just so delicate.
And but the funny thing is that ones that I pull out that are really old and they're really broken in half, I still put them on the tree.
Yeah,
or I fix them if it's a little bit of glue. I'm fixing it. I want to use it.
It depends on like the pet situation. When we've had you know, dogs or little dogs that want to jump up and grab stuff, and you know, the trees can be pretty enticing. You know, with all these things going on, and then if you have those very fragile kind of old ornaments that you don't want, there's always like, man down, you know, like you're always going to lose some people, you know, you got to break some eggs in order to make a cake.
Right.
And there's always an inventory taken at the end of the season, how many are gone.
Or you can take those old ornaments and put them in sort of a clear bowl and use that as like a table topper.
I've done that too.
See?
You can purchase the old ornaments a lot of times at like an antique store, and then you just arrange them in a bowl, little decorative Christmas balls.
Or if it's really old, you look at that ornament and say, thank you so much for all the memories you've given me. And then you just drop it in the trash and buy a new one.
What?
That's very Marie Kondo of you.
I'm so not Marie Kondo. Like, everything for me sparks joy. I don't want to get rid of anything. But sometimes I'm like, okay, I need to part ways with this.
Is it, Jane, is it okay? And now they have one, you know, where you can kind of capture the essence of those kind of big multicolored lights that we all sort of grew up with.
Oh, I love those. The Snoopy lights, kind of, right?
Yeah, exactly. Where you feel like you need to keep those, but they're just such a pain, because I remember there was times when I was little, you had to kind of find which was the culprit, because if one went out, then they all went out. Right?
Yeah.
But now they make ones that are brand new, kind of state-of-the-art, probably energy efficient, not so deadly, but they look old.
But those Snoopy bulbs, listen to this, another trend, you're finding them on trees.
So I love that look.
It's a fantastic look. I was so surprised to see it because I remember those being outside or just a light bulb of old days. But now they make new trees with them on.
Mark this date on your calendar. It's Saturday, November 23rd from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. over at Tree Time Christmas Creations in Lake Barrington. If you've never been, this is an excuse to go. You will get an exclusive 15% discount off that day's purchase only. Register today on WGN Radio's Facebook events page or get details at WGNradio.com/events. Now, Jane, you're also going to be doing some crafty type things. I know this is radio, so you can describe what you're doing.
So we have a big, huge show planned. So trends and inspiration. Then we're going to do a little bit of hands-on in the store. Everybody gets to try to do some stuff with ribbon, which is fantastic. But I'm also going to show you some ideas that you can do when you get home to add to what you have. So if you've got old denim, you can take the top of your denim jeans and turn it into a wine bag sleeve. Tie it up with that ribbon that we just played with, and you're going to put your wine in here.
You made that?
Yeah.
That's pretty cute.
I was wondering what I was going to do with my old Santa jeans, and now...
And what about your old CDs? You can turn those into ornaments. So you can get some of the things that you would add to the ornament, but you find your old CDs at home, you just cover it up with a photo, and then this is my cat.
Okay, that's pretty cute.
And that's my new husband. So you're just making different ornaments, and these are great gifts too. So I'm going to show these, give a little bit of DIY inspiration along with what you can buy at Tree Time.
Buy the big tree at Tree Time, and then make some stuff to hang on.
We talked about tables. This is a table runner.
So you can just take your favorite Christmas material or ribbons.
This is neckties.
Oh, my God. You are so creative.
Nobody's wearing neckties. Well, some people are. But, you know, Dad had them. They're full of gravy stains. You find the old ties. And this is a table runner.
Okay, that's really cute. We'll take pictures of these and put them on Facebook. Glenn has called us, 312-981-7200. Glenn, do you have a specific tree idea that you'd like to share with us?
I sure do. We have an entertainment TV room type of thing set up, so we wanted to go with a theme. So what we did is we put the Christmas tree up, and instead of garland and stuff, we used 16-millimeter old film, and then we put the spool of the film as the tree topper, and then we went to the dollar store and got those little gold plastic frames and put black and white movie star photographs as the ornaments wrapped on the tree and decorated all within the theme of a movie theme.
How cool is that?
That's so creative and so fantastic.
You have so much extra time, Glenn. That's awesome.
No, he doesn't have extra time. He's just using his time wisely to get creative. This is a great idea. Well, I might steal that, Glenn.
Well, feel free. I mean, I had a roommate who was nuts about Christmas. So, like yourself, I have a tree almost in every room. We tried to stay with a theme in every room.
Nice.
I really love that. Glenn, that's a great idea.
Thank you so much. It really came out looking good. And we just put the white lights in it, and we made them flicker real fast, wow, like the old-fashioned film.
Yeah. You know, I hope Bill Leff is listening on his day off, because that would be right up Bill's alley. Oh, he should make an action figure tree.
I'm sure he's got enough figures to hang.
Oh, yes, he does.
Or a wreath, an action figure wreath. Yeah. And you could do the same thing with the old film on a wreath.
Thank you so much, Glenn. We appreciate it.
No problem.
And Bob, can we just get this in before our segment's up? Hi, Bob. You have a tree that you're doing that's very special.
Yeah, my family is a military family. We've served since the Civil War, every generation. And I have a daughter who's going to have her Army commission in 2 years. She's going to be an Army nurse. And her older brother is going to get his commission in the Navy in June. So,
wow.
On top of that, I have a son who's been in the White House as a Secret Service agent since he protected Clinton for 2 years at the end, and then Cheney for 8, and then Michelle and the girls for 2. And he has always sent the White House special Christmas ornament. Have you ever seen those?
Sure.
Yes. Yeah.
Year. Okay, so we've got about 18 of those. And I'm a Boy Scout Scoutmaster, so we're just going to cover it with all different kinds of ornaments and clippings that we have and from way back, you know, in the 1800s about old service.
A service tree.
Fantastic.
Thank you for all of your service, your entire family. That makes our family look like a bunch of ne'er-do-wells. We don't do anything.
We are happy to serve.
Well, thank you, Bob. We appreciate it, especially on this Veterans Day. What a great idea, a service tree. Thanks for sharing that.
Bye-bye.
What? That's such a great
fantastic
idea.
Fantastic. And this is what I love, that there's no end to creativity, right? So whatever is special and whatever is meaningful to you or your family, make a tree out of it, or make a wreath if you don't have space.
Yeah, I like that.
Thank you for his service and his inspiration. I feel a little bit inspired because this is kind of mind-blowing for me. I never knew that you could have all these different kind of theme trees that could be dedicated to either one topic or some other thing that you're doing, or just color, right? I had no idea you could do that. I thought it was just
you can deviate from the plan.
Yeah, wow.
And you know what's lovely about the holiday season is that this gives you the opportunity to redecorate your home. It's temporary, and then when you clean it up, then you're going to clean out, and then you have a new set for your house to start the new year.
I like it. I decided, I think a couple years ago, I was cleaning out, I was getting antiques from my sister's house, because there's a lot of stuff there, and she had an old sled. Oh. So now that's on the porch, and I just put a sprig of greenery on it.
Fantastic.
And it looks like a Christmas story kind of come to life on my front porch.
And you can leave that up even longer than the season.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's a great idea.
All right, she's Jane Monzuris, now Klaus. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And you will be out at Treetime Creations, Christmas Creations in Lake Barrington, Saturday, November 23rd, 8 a.m. to 10 p.m.
10 a.m.
I'm sorry. Yeah, you're not going to be there all day. You can find out more at WGNradio.com. Have a very Merry Christmas,
Jane.
Thank
you. Same to you.
All right, coming up next, news from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. It's all happening right here, 720 WGN.
It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas.
It sure is. It's Wendy Snyder here along with Dane Neal. Bill Leff is off today, and he'll return tomorrow, but Bill is going to be very sorry that he missed our next guest, Tony Fulmer, who is the Chief Horticultural Officer at the Chalet Nursery. How are you, Tony?
I'm happy to be here.
Bill will miss you. Before we get started, Dane, didn't somebody walk away with the KC and the Sunshine Band tickets?
Skipping away, running with them in hand. A big KC congratulations to Mark from Homewood, who was our fifth caller.
That's going to be a great show. A lot of hits there. Boogie Shoes, one of my favorite KC and the Sunshine Band. Tony, do you have a good KC and the Band? KC and the Sunshine Band?
I don't. I was more of a disco guy.
That is disco.
Yeah. Not compared to Donna Summer and Cher.
Oh, you went... Okay. Don't make me laugh because I am very congested and I sound like Muttley, that dog. Do you remember with Dick Dastardly? All right, Tony, it snowed. It surprised us all. This is big time snow. What are we supposed to do to get our gardens ready when there's snow?
Well, this is big time problem. So the first thing is, how can you even find your garden when it's under 3 to 5 inches of snow? So a lot of the things that we talked about the last time I was here that were nice things that you could do if you had a little bit of spare time at the end of the season, well, the season vacation is here, and now it's about priorities. So to me, and this may surprise a lot of people, but to me, the top two priorities, and this is what I was doing all day yesterday on my day off, was getting the leaves up.
Yeah.
You do not want those leaves to mat down and freeze in your lawn. Wherever those freeze in your lawn, next spring when you go to rake those up or they blow away, you're going to have a nice big bare spot. And so lawns are going to look awful if we don't get a little bit of a warm break where we can get in there and get those leaves up and get some air circulation. And then, surprisingly, this is probably going to be less popular, is that after you get those leaves up, you need to mow. Because as long as the grass is growing, you don't want it to go to bed for the winter 3 or 4 inches long and mat down on top of warm soil with snow over it. There's a fungal disease called snow mold, and those are exactly the conditions that would cause you to have, when the snow melts next spring, it will look like little white spidery fungal webs all over the lawn. So
We just got a new patio installed, so we have some areas that we need to lay sod. It's too late now,
It's too late now. Yes, that's going to be a spring thing now.
Even just a few days ago, I saw some people on social media or friends from around the country, but in kind of a similar area as far as kind of the weather patterns, and they're trying to put some bulbs in. And so, is it too late for all that, too?
We had our big holiday event this past weekend, and people were buying the last of the bulbs and saying, I'm going to do them. And so the frost isn't in the ground. The ground hasn't frozen yet, so you would need to do that ASAP.
Like right now?
Like right now. It's not going to be pleasant. Tulips have no problem. You can put tulips in, and it can freeze 15 minutes later, and tulips don't have a problem. Daffodils, as hardy as they are a little bit fussier, and they need a few more weeks to have a chance to get some rooting done before the ground freezes. But if anybody has bulbs, and for heaven's sake, don't say, I'll leave them in the ground or in the garage, and I will put them in March or April. You can't do that. They have to be in the ground to get their chilling period.
All right. So what happens if, you know, the seasons seem to be changing a little bit and winter is coming earlier, it seems. So what if we would have planted bulbs, say, a month ago? What happens? Is that too early?
No,
is it better to do it early than late?
There's a breaking point there, and so that's why typically you don't want to put bulbs in before soil temperatures, not air temperatures, but before soil temperatures are until they're below 60.
Oh, okay.
And so on our website, all during September and October, we go ahead and I take the soil's temperature twice a week, and we post it on our website so you can look. So right now, though, it's a moot point. It's get them in the ground. But I would say if you're putting them in this late, you definitely, this year it's not an option, you definitely would want to put 1 to 2 inches of mulch over the top to keep that ground from freezing solid so quickly.
You know that precipitation can vary from one end of Chicagoland to the other, but soil temperature, when you do that and you put out that reading, that temperature reading for the soil up on the website, is it pretty universal? Like for kind of everybody within sort of the zone that
but it's better than the sharp stick in the eye. You know, it gives you some kind of a starting point to work with.
Okay.
And typically it's always very safe by the latter half of October. You know, don't worry about the soil temperature, just get them in, or else you could be in a situation like this where you can be in mud, in cold mud, planting your bulbs.
And if I may be wrong here, but if the ground is too cold, it's hard to get them deep enough, and then the squirrels will get to them.
Well, the thing is, once you break through that, if you get a little bit of freezing or frost in there, once you break through that,
it's softer underneath.
You're fine. It's getting through that soil surface if the surface freezes.
All right. He is Tony Fulmer. He is the chief horticultural officer at Chalet Nursery. You can go to chaletnursery.com. He's talking about the soil temperatures. They have a lot of information on their website and some upcoming events, which we will talk about next here on 720 WGN. All right, Bill Leff is off today. Dane Neal is sitting in his chair. And Tony Fulmer is one of our favorite guests, Chief Horticultural Officer at Chalet Nursery, 3132 Lake Avenue in Wilmette. Bill is not here to mention it's right by the Panda Express.
He'll be so happy.
I know.
He'll be so happy.
All right, so you need to rake the leaves as soon as the snow melts. And it's supposed to. It's not going to be snow from now till winter kicks in.
Right.
So get rid of the leaves. Mow the lawn one more time.
If you at least. And that will also help you. If you get the worst of the leaves up now and you bag your leaves on the lawnmower, then that can be your way to pick up those last leaves before the ground freezes.
All right. Sue has called us. She has a question for you. 312-981-7200. Hey, Sue, it's Tony Fulmer.
Hi, Wendy. Love your show all the time, especially when Tony's there. And I have a question for you, or for him, about my Asiago grasses. They're beautiful and, you know, just fluffy and blooming, and I just hate to, but I think I have to cut them back for the winter. Can he tell me when?
Is it Asiago grasses? I thought, is it cheese grass?
Yes, it's one of those beautiful decorative grasses, and it's like a medium height, and they flow and fall very gently. They're just beautiful. But can he tell me when is a good time to cut them back? Do I have to do it?
Well, you have to be a little bit careful, Sue. There are some grasses, that ornamental grasses that are ornamental. The overwhelming majority of them are perennial. So I'm sorry, I was having problems with my headset, and I didn't hear what kind of grasses you said they were.
Mine is called Asiago.
Okay.
And it's
one of the maiden grasses.
It is a decorative grass.
Right. It's one of the maiden grasses. Technically, yes. That is hardy. So that gets down to the option. You have an option. It's an aesthetic thing. You can eat, if you want to take them, leave them up for the winter to enjoy them. That's fine. Or you can cut them back right now and have it over and done with. It doesn't matter. There's no wrong answer. There's no right or wrong.
Then I would cut them back in the spring.
Yes, absolutely.
That's what I do, Sue, because I like looking out in the backyard, and amongst all the snow, you see this beautiful...
Well, unless the wet, steady, frozen slop that we have out there now takes them all the way down and breaks them all off.
Yes, it did that with my sedum. Will that come back next year?
Of course. Absolutely.
Because it just looks like, you know, a giant elephant stepped in the middle of it.
A lot of it is just that the winter effect that you would ordinarily have when that first snow is so wet and icy and breaks things over, they don't exactly pop back up. But there's no right or wrong answer with that.
So either now or springtime.
Good. Okay, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Sue, and thank you for listening. Rose protection. I have some roses that I didn't want, and I've never put those cones over them, and they won't die. So do you really have to protect them?
So, Tony, do some people ever ask you, like, how
do you
kill it?
Oh, sure, absolutely. Oh, hear that all the time. Absolutely. This would be one of those years that it probably would be a good idea to do rose protection, especially on the heels of the polar vortex last year. And so typically you're looking for 3 days, not consecutive, but an accumulation of 3 days below 28-degree temperatures. The leaves should be kind of gold and brown and hanging limp. If they're still green, it's too early. Or if you put your foot in the bed and the bed is frozen underfoot, that means you can go ahead and mulch them. And typically what I like to do is, not climbers, but all the other roses, cut them back to about 24 inches so that the tops don't act as a sail and rock the plants back and forth and break off the little feeder roots that take up water and nutrients next year. And then I like to use leaf mulch or compost, cotton burr compost, and make like what I would call a little beaver dam, about 8 to 10 inches. Just heel that up over the top of the plant and pat it into place. There are also little corrugated plastic things called rose collars that you snap into place to hold that mulch over the top of the plant. But this looks like it's going to be a year that we need to have the rose protection.
I've never cut back my roses. I just kind of leave them.
Well, but you do it in the spring then.
Yeah. But I can do it now because
I would call this a rough cut back.
Okay.
And again, if it's a climber, I underline don't do climbers, but shrub roses, hybrid teas, I just do a rough cut and take them down. If they're 5 or 6 feet tall or even 4 or 5 feet tall, I take them back to 24 inches so they don't get blown around so much.
We had some of those styrofoam kind of topper things.
Those pretty things.
Do those do anything?
They can cause a lot of problems, Dane. When we get into a warm spell in January, you can get a greenhouse effect. So if you don't have the ones with the removable tops, or if you have the ones that are solid, if you haven't taken a pencil and punched at least 5 or 6 air holes in there, you get a greenhouse effect, and all of a sudden what that's supposed to be doing, which is keeping the plant cold, all of a sudden you get a heat buildup in there, and the plant start coming out of dormancy, and then it's a problem.
Boxwood. The polar vortex last year killed my Rose of Sharon. It just, half the tree or bush was just brown. I cut it back, and it started to grow back. Mm-hmm. Boxwood, I have 3 of them in a little arrangement in the front. Half of one of them is brown and never came back.
Okay, well, this is an important thing to talk about because last year was really that polar vortex did a number on everyone's boxwood. So even though these Canadian varieties that we have are innately hardy.
They play hockey. They're very good at hockey.
Yes, yeah. No jerseys. So there's a product called Wiltproof, which is actually an anti-desiccant or an anti-transpirant. And basically what that means is it's a sealant. And the damage comes from the ground being frozen and the combination of winter sun and winter wind start pulling and literally suck the moisture out of the leaves. So anything that you can do to reduce that increases the likelihood of those plants not having winter damage next year. So the product is called Wiltproof, and it is a pine resin derivative, but you spray it on the underside of the leaves.
So closest to the ground?
Wherever they are.
Underside
of the leaves.
Oh, okay.
Because if you go back to high school biology, the stomates, the things that where the water loss is, that's on the underside of the leaves. So don't bother standing up and spraying. You have to get down and spray from the underneath side, and it comes out as a milky white foam. And in about 20 minutes, it will dry, and it will look like you've used a plant shine.
Oh.
And that dramatically, you can do that instead of putting up an ugly screen or some kind of a tarp or some kind of a wind barrier. And that should hopefully make a big difference. The other thing is make sure they go into the winter very well mulched. You want a couple of inches of mulch over that root system.
Is it too late to mulch if
no,
I haven't mulched?
No, it's never too late to mulch. As long as you can get it out of the bag, it's not too late to mulch.
Okay, and Wiltproof is the name of that. Can it be used on any other type of evergreen?
Any kind of evergreen. But the important thing is use it on the underside of leaves, and we sell a tremendous amount of it for people that have fresh holiday greens or trees that they take inside. Does the same thing for the cut trees.
And if you haven't brought your indoor plants indoors, you've lost
ding, ding,
them.
Ding, ding, ding.
No. you have things going on, events coming up at the chalet. You have a lot of things. Any of your favorites stand out?
Well, I have to think about it. It's a week from this coming weekend. If I've got the date right, I don't have it in front of me. We have the holiday demo weekend, which we've been doing for a number of years now, and we show people how to do lots of different things. So how to do an outdoor container. I will be talking about how to do bulbs like paper whites and amaryllis or forcing the spring flowering bulbs, how to successfully force those inside, how to do a bow, all kinds of different fun things.
How fun is that? You can go to chaletnursery.com to find out all that information. They're also on Facebook, Twitter, and Insta at Chalet Nursery. And you can go to 3132 Lake Avenue in Wilmette to go see Tony Fulmer, the Chief Horticultural Officer at Chalet Nursery, as I said, in Wilmette. Very quickly, these trees are confused because there are still leaves on the trees, and the snow came down. The first one we got a couple weeks ago, we're taking branches down right and left.
Right.
They've damaged our trees. There's nothing we can do about that.
The biggest thing with those, obviously we can't do anything about getting the weight of those leaves off, but where they have splintered or where they're hanging, we have to be very careful about making the proper kind of cut as soon as we can. So just because nature took it off, nature didn't necessarily take it off in a clean cut. So you're going to have to go back in there and assess that and try and clean that up and make that the smoothest possible cut that you can. And unfortunately, not everybody wants to make a flush cut. They want to cut it back as close as they possibly can, and you mustn't do that. There's a little tiny ring of cells out there that you need to leave, so you need to cut beyond that. But
yeah, you see some of the things that happened a couple weeks ago when we had that big sloppy snow, and it would just tore it where some of the trees actually sort of split in half big parts of it. I don't even know how you'd
have to call an arborist for that, a tree service, right?
Well, it depends upon in a situation like that, if it's a major portion of the tree, if it's more minor, you know, side or lateral branches, then it's a matter you may be able to do that. But the important thing is don't just drag the limb off and say, okay, everything is fine, because if it's not a clean cut, then you can get, in future years, you can get a heartwood decay in there and you can lose the plant.
You are so very helpful. We really appreciate it.
Always my pleasure.
Those birch logs, do you sell those over at Chalet?
We sell the ones for burning, and we sell the pretty ones that have been hand-selected that are perfectly pure white. Yes, we have those in bundles, too.
And you can put them in planters. You can just take a stack of them and put, like, a red bow around it for Christmas and lean it up against the side of your porch.
We have long poles for that. We have the regular firewood for burning, and then we have the decorative ones for people that just want them for, you know, the Architectural Digest look.
Aren't they just so pretty?
They're beautiful.
I love that white birch, and that's what it is, a white birch?
It is a white birch.
Perfect. He's Tony Fulmer. Like I said, you can find him at the Chalet Nursery. Thank you so much for coming up. We totally appreciate it.
My pleasure.
All right, quick break, and then we'll come back with news. And Eric Zorn will stop by after the news today on WGN. And Dane Neal is in for Bill Left today,
yes.
And I'm Wendy Snyder.
Well, Tony, I've got actually one more question.
This is one tiny quick question.
I know a lot of the questions that we have, you know, I think apply to so many people around the Chicagoland and area and listening audience. But I had, so years ago, I was able, a plumeria, which, and Wendy had talked a little bit off the air about Hawaii stuff, was able to get one of the stalks from it and bring it home. And so we put it out, and we bring it back in. We put it out and bring it. It's been like 7-8 years now.
Really?
And it has like flower, not flowers, but it has leaves on it. It grows leaves, but it never grew any flowers. Is there anything I can do? Or did I just get the wrong one?
No. The question is, how much light are you giving it?
I mean,
they should not be, you know, they shouldn't be on a shaded patio. They need at least 5 to 6 hours of sun a day. And if they're not blooming and they're getting that kind of light, you may want to just give them a little bit of a specialty fertilizer that has a high second number, which is phosphorus.
Okay.
So you're looking for a bloom booster type of fertilizer.
Bloom booster. I like that.
Yeah. So where you want that second number, the phosphorus, is at least 20% or more.
The sweet smell of plumeria. So I love that smell. It's just, isn't it sweet? Isn't that what they use to make the Lays?
Sweet without being. Sometimes gardenias can be a little heavy.
Yeah.
That's a totally different, more tropical scent.
That's what we've been hoping. Yeah, it's beautiful. We were hoping for that, but it's been 8 years of disappointment. So hopefully.
You've got to push a little bit more fertilizer.
Thank you, Tony. You are the best.
Thank you.
Coming up after the news, we'll talk to Eric Zorn from the Chicago Tribune. But right now, it's news time here on 720 WGN.
Zorn, 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 the greatest father in all the land. Zorn, 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 we sing the praises of Zorn.
Dane Neal is here instead of Bill Left. Bill's back tomorrow. I'm Wendy Snyder, and you get to hear the Eric Zorn song.
It's great. Whenever you can have a great song, a theme song, catchphrase, anything, right? And you got it.
It is.
Congratulations.
That's exactly it. Thank you.
Chicago Tribune columnist Eric Zorn is here. I've been reading you a lot lately, sir.
Good. Thank you.
And I still have questions about this world we live in.
Well, I'm here to answer them.
All right. The school strike was going on. The school strike came back. A lot of people were worried about the athletes. What's going on with the cross-country runners? Because I don't 100% understand this.
Well, the cross-country runners were able to run. The Chicago Public Schools kids were not allowed to run in the sectional meets, I guess.
Because
they weren't in school, and the strike was going on. And this is a rule that the Illinois High School Association has. And I want to talk about that rule because I think the rule is fundamentally a bad one to have as a statewide policy. And so they went to court, and the first judge said, you know, sorry, this is the rules, you can't run. After the first round, which I want to say, is it sectionals then regionals? I think that's right. After the sectionals, they went to court, and they found a sympathetic judge in Cook County, Judge Neil Cohen, and he said, no, I can run. You know, I'm tired of adults goofing around, and these are cross country runners. Remember, cross country is not; it is a team sport in that, you know, you're it's cumulative, and you do need coaching to get your training right and all that stuff like that. But when it comes to the meet, you know, when you're running, you don't really need a coach there. You know, let's be honest.
There's some like sideline encouragement at one point throughout,
yes, but
about it.
It could be anybody. And so essentially there was no real reason that they couldn't
Why were they
run.
Telling them they couldn't do it because they missed the sectionals?
Well, they had
or
to
whatever?
Miss the sectionals, yes.
So what, that gave them an unfair advantage because they were rested, or did it give them less of an advantage because they didn't get the practice?
The training, they didn't get the, and also just the uncertainty of not being able to run. In any case, cross country is just who's the fastest one, I guess, you know, from point A to point B, right? That's the sport. So they were then allowed to run in the sectionals. This ruling came down pretty quickly. And then they were allowed to run in the sectionals, and I think 20 runners qualified for the state meet, which was on Saturday in Peoria. And so the Illinois High School Association, rather than just say, okay, we lost this round, you know,
extenuating circumstances.
Yeah, this is a really weird situation. They took it to court. They went to the Illinois Appellate Court and they tried to get the Illinois Appellate Court to block the runners from running on Saturday. And remember, now school's back in session, okay? So essentially it was just a flex by Illinois High School Association, and they lost in that. What happened was that the Illinois Appellate Court said on Thursday, they said, yeah, we'll take this up next week, meaning
it'd already be over.
Today's Veterans Day. They'll take it up tomorrow, meaning, like, so what, right? It's like, right, the kids got to run. I understand some of them did okay.
Shouldn't they have?
My point is that I think that a rule like this ought to be discarded. That, what, you know, when there's a strike, you can't have sports. And I looked around the country. I looked at news stories from around the country, and it develops that in some other places, I don't know how many, I couldn't establish how many states, that it is up to the union and the school district to negotiate what happens with sports. Because a lot of times the coaches are teachers.
Right. They're the gym teacher or something.
Sometimes they're not. Sometimes they're just adults. Sometimes the sport uses school facilities. Well, the school facilities in Chicago were being used for daycare and other kind of things anyway, so it wasn't like that was a problem. So I can really see where you would have the school district, the union, and the CPS and CTU here negotiate this and say, okay, what sports can go ahead? There was I think girls volleyball, they got knocked out of the tournament. I think tennis players got knocked out of the state tournament, and then there was some football teams that did manage to squeak in because the IHSA bent its rules for them. So it's like there's not a lot of principle behind the rule that they have, and it's a one-size-fits-all state rule. They, for some silly reason, they went to court to fight it, to try to get these kids not to run, and I thought, like, what a stupid hill to die on.
Yeah.
Now just let the kids run, and they're going to have a meeting. The IHSA is going to have a big board meeting in December at which they tell me they're going to revisit some of these rules and think about it. So I hope that they kick this back to the local level. And it could well be that the union doesn't want it to be at a local level and the school district doesn't want it because they don't want to be the bad guys. They want these bureaucrats in Springfield to be the bad guys who can't let them run. But I think that's taking the pressure away from them.
You should. I think that they have to come to some kind of, you know, consensus on this. And you saw things where they were offering up daycare service and things because no one wants to. You know, you want to get your point across. You want to have as much leverage as you can for the argument, but you don't want to put extra pressure on make everybody crabby, right? And I think this is another situation where they're doing it. I mean, you're right, Eric. I think individually, cross country is a sport where maybe it fits even more into it because you really don't have an organized coaching situation. You're off on some golf course somewhere running, so it's not like you're there. You don't need the school,
right,
you know, infrastructure there in order to facilitate the activity so that you can go ahead and do it. But, and you mentioned it again, is that a lot of times those coaches are also teachers. So are they walking across the picket line by participating?
See, I would argue say that they're not.
So they should just agree, right?
I would think that a coach could coach a sport after school and that the district, school district, could agree to pay the coaches as they've been paid before, and that's as an independent issue from the teachers and the classrooms and all the other things that they were debating. I think that it is a separate issue and that they could easily negotiate that as a separate settlement for sports. There are things that can't be postponed. You can postpone games in the middle of the season sometimes. People were saying, well, what about chess club? What about the orchestra? Yeah. What about the school play? There are things that can't be postponed and there are things that can be, and this is something that should be worked out on a local level with the teachers and with the union and the district, and not imposed by the state.
Especially if it's at the state level where it's hinging on the activities and participation of so many other entities.
Yes.
Where the chess club, you could just organize with the other chess kids, like, let's just do this another day.
Right, right. But
it's just so not fair to the kids.
Well, right. and that's the thing, is that you do want leverage, and, you know, Dane's right to mention that, you know, this is leverage. You don't have school, and that's bad for the kids too, but this is part of a strike, and strikes do impose costs on people, so it's a very interesting issue, and I hope that they resolve it to the favor of the kids this time.
And the football could play, right? Is it because football is more popular or brings the school more money?
It had to do with the number of wins that they had, games they played in the season. It was crazy.
He's Eric Zorn, columnist from the Chicago Tribune, also one of the hosts of the Mincing Rascals podcast, the award-winning Mincing Rascals.
John Williams will never let you forget that.
I know. When I'm king, I'm going to start saying that. Yeah. I think I'm going to.
Queen, right. Probably, right?
No, I want to be king.
Okay, fine.
I'm sorry. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll come back with more of Eric here on 720 WGN. It's Wendy Snyder here along with Dane Neal. Bill will be back tomorrow. Eric Zorn is here today. And what's the next subject you want to talk about today?
I would love to talk about what's going on in Washington right now with the impeachment coming up. The hearings are starting this week. And
it is cray-cray. Can I just say that?
It is crazy.
That's a technical term.
And
yes.
If you're watching what's been going on, what the Republican defense has been, it's sort of twofold. One is they're saying that, well, this is no big deal. That, yeah, maybe the president did put the squeeze on Ukraine to investigate the Bidens, but this is no big deal. But the second thing that they've been going at, they're still going after the whistleblower. And as you remember, it was the whistleblower who came forward to raise concerns about the, I think it was July 25th phone call between the president and the president, President Trump and the president of Ukraine. And this whistleblower was admitted in his complaint that it was a secondhand bit of information, that he had talked to several people who had all expressed the same concern about this. This began the process that we're in right now. All the witnesses that were called, the release of the so-called transcript of Trump's conversation, all this stuff has come from this whistleblower. And the Republicans want to out this person. And his name has been all over right-wing media. And they have been asking that he be called as a witness in this probe coming up this coming week. And you know, the response to that is, first of all, that a whistleblower is like a tipster. It's like if somebody he overhears somebody talking about burying a dead body in their yard, and they go to the police and say, I heard a guy talking about burying a dead body in his yard, you might want to check it out. And the police go and they, you know, send some dogs in the backyard or whatever, and they smell a dead body, dig it up, and they arrest the guy. The whoever overheard the conversation is not a relevant witness. He's not the accuser. And Donald Trump's been saying, oh, I have a right to know who my accuser is. The whistleblower is not his accuser. His accuser is this raft of witnesses who've come before Congress on the record with using their names, who have testified to more intimate knowledge of this phone call. But they are going after this whistleblower, and I think it's in part because they want to discourage anybody else in the in Washington, close to the administration, from joining the whistleblower in calling attention to things that need to be called attention to. The whole premise of whistleblowing, the whole idea behind it, is that you have people within organizations, within political organizations, within business organizations, who can come forward and they can identify instances of, say, environmental laws being broken, financial laws being broken, sexual harassment, all these kind of things. They can confidentially give a tip to investigators who can then look into these things. And it is really an important part of our system, I think. And the whistleblower protection laws are extremely important because they are what allow us to find out what's really going on in a lot of areas. And when you start threatening to out somebody, when you start outing them, you know, in your right-wing media, when you start demanding that they be called to testify,
and they don't even know that that's not confirmed that that is the whistleblower.
No, it's not. They probably have a pretty good sense of who it is. And the talk, and you read this even in our own paper, you read commentary saying that, oh, it's important to know where this investigation came from. It's really not important to know. I was saying this
if you find the dead body, it doesn't make the guy less dead.
The Democrats' line is that it's like the guy who pulled the fire alarm. You know, like, he's not the arsonist. He's the guy who saw the fire and pulled the fire alarm. And so it doesn't matter if it was like a shirt-tail relative of the Bidens or if it was Melania Trump. It doesn't matter who the whistleblower is at all to what we now know. And everything that whistleblower has said has been confirmed and amplified on the record witnesses. This is an attempt to intimidate people. And that's why and it's also an attempt to distract the public from what they're going to learn this week, when some of these witnesses who testified behind closed doors are now going to come out and testify in the public on television.
I wonder what purpose it serves, because it seems like it's too late for all of that stuff. And you mentioned it too, is that all of the things that were intimated in the whistleblower report were either confirmed by this call record or all of these witnesses who, like you said, the proximity of the situation is a lot closer. So all of that stuff is already there. So knowing who this person is, I don't know that it changes anything. You mentioned that it's going to put a chill on people doing this in the future.
But in all areas, Dean. That's the thing, Dane. That's the thing. It is designed to chill this kind of whistleblowing.
But that's not what they're saying. They're not saying,
I know.
Like,
you're,
here's what we're trying to do is discourage this type of behavior in the future, because you wonder, you know, having that person out there, like what purpose, and I get it. The purpose is so that you can have this person there. Then you can say, well, this person didn't deserve to have the ability to do this because of either their background or political affiliation or whatever acts they may have had.
He was motivated. We didn't like Trump.
But isn't that like, that's the whole idea. So you can say, well, that guy, his opinion, whatever he says, isn't relevant.
But again, it doesn't matter. Yeah. It doesn't matter if he's a foreign agent. It doesn't matter if he's a lifelong Democrat. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter because he provided a tip that has now been followed up on. But they want to, this is the whole thing that's going on right now, is the Republicans are saying, oh, this is unfair. They're talking about, oh, it was in secret. It was secret proceedings. Well, now it's going to be public. So Trump is complaining that it's going to be on television. He said it shouldn't be on television. So they're making all these process arguments about this. And they're trying to stay away, in my view, they're trying to stay away from the central question of, was it right for the president to threaten to withhold aid to the military aid, desperately needed military aid from the Ukraine, until they would come out and announce that they were going to have an investigation of Joe Biden?
Don't you think it should just be, just to kind of expedite the process, and we understand kind of what's already going to happen in the House and in the Senate, is just that they should just come out and say, like, yeah, this is kind of what he did. It looks bad, but it doesn't rise to the level of, you know, that could be the argument, as opposed to, it seems like competing arguments, because the president still says, I didn't do anything, and everybody else has to sort of.
Well, then look into it, and if nothing was done, then we find out nothing was done.
Yeah, I don't understand. And you got guys like John Bolton, who is now kind of playing coy about he's not willing to testify unless the Democrats take him to court and make him testify. And the Democrats are holding back on that, which I think is very puzzling, because they are kind of allowing a precedent to be set. And we're talking about whistleblowers and precedents. I don't like what the Democrats are doing here by not pursuing. They're trying to get Mick Mulvaney, the White House chief of staff, and there's some other people who have refused to testify. They refused to come. They refused to answer. I don't even know if they subpoenaed John Bolton yet.
You refuse?
I know.
See, I don't
this
really
is the problem.
Understand
well,
any of this?
Well, they're claiming. You know, we have the three branches of government. They're claiming that this is a violation of the separation of powers. I would like to see that tested in court. I would like to have Congress have this investigatory authority, because if they can't call the witnesses they want to call, then they're really toothless. And it's not just for this investigation, it's for every investigation going forward.
Exactly.
It is the oversight that Congress has, that a Republican House of Representatives is going to have over a Democratic president. This is something that they're...
You're right, Erica. It really does. It's crazy. You think of everything as so rock solid, but the fabric of the government and this whole, the way that everybody has to work together and accept the authority of the other branches and everything else, it's just so fragile. And you're seeing a little bit of that now, where one branch can just say, this isn't legitimate. And it's like, you can't do that. We're not gonna adhere to any of the actual. It's kind of scary, right?
It's a shame.
Everybody has to go by the rules.
Exactly. And if you remember, Bill Clinton went through this, and he said that, you know, and he testified in that civil case. He didn't say, I'm not going to do this. If you remember, Susan McDougal, I think it was, in the whole thing, she went to jail because she didn't testify. And the Supreme Court did slap down Richard Nixon for trying to hang on to his tapes. So I think they've got some precedent on their side, and I think it's something that they should really pursue. And they seem to be worried about timing and about the Iowa caucuses. And this is a bigger story than that. This is a bigger issue. And I really wish that the Democrats would push this and get a decision on it, because this is a very good opportunity for that.
What has happened to our country?
Well, but you're right, though. Regardless of where anybody comes down politically, it sets a precedent. And, you know, and the whole fabric is just getting kind of stretched out of shape here.
Yeah. And whistleblowers, everybody should be worried, because everybody's walking around with a cell phone now with a camera and video. I think there are going to be more whistleblowers and whistle videos.
I wrote my column last week that whistleblowers are like are sort of like the fifth estate. They say the press is the fourth estate. Whistleblowers are the fifth estate. They're a really important part of the way our system now works, which is when you have this, you know, misbehavior in corporations, in government, in organizations, agencies, all those kind of places, you need people in there who are going to blow the whistle and let us know what's going on.
It has to be done. I'm going to start videoing everywhere. I'm going to just wear a GoPro all the time just to document everything
like
I do. That's what I'm doing. Eric Zorn, thank you so much. You can find him at Chicago Tribune, reading it, or online, and listen to Mincing Rascals. Thank you very much.
Sure.
We're going to take a quick break, and news coming up next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN.